This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right. Great to have you with us on this Thursday. Bye week for Penn State. We'll get into that in just a moment. Today's show being brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com, Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee, terrific service department that backs it up every step of the way, whether it's an inspection or it happens to be routine or difficult, they handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Always a pleasure to be joined by old friend, good friend, Adam Rittenberg. Adam, first of all, how have you been?
Doing great, Steve. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
All right. Yep. It was a big weekend for the Big Ten last weekend. I think when they put all the expansion together, Saturday was a day that they were hoping to get, where you've got Penn State, USC in the afternoon, and Oregon, Ohio State at night. In watching the Penn State game, what in the end struck you about the performance by both teams?
Well, yeah, I think both teams had their moments. And you know, for Penn State to win the way they did, you showed a lot of resiliency. You showed some character and go out on the road, long trip. Obviously, you're playing against a team that, you know, has talent on both sides of the ball. And, you know, I was talking about this earlier on another show. Like, I kind of like USC's team better than I have the last couple of years, maybe because it's a little bit more balanced. They just haven't had the results. And, you know, Penn State made a couple more plays there down the stretch. Obviously, Tyler Warren had an incredible performance at tight end and, you know, continues to sort of lift up that passing game. And, you know, a defense that was struggling a little bit early, you know, made some key plays there to secure a pretty important win. And, you know, now Penn State enters, you know, a stretch that will really define their season most likely. But they do so with an undefeated record.
In fact, what I've been telling people about USC when they ask me about them, it says they've lost three games by a total of 13 points. I mean, I'm sorry, but that's not a bad team when you're that close and not getting the result as you talk about. Drew Aller's now a second-year starter at quarterback. Are you seeing a different type of quarterback in Drew Aller now because he is a second-year starter?
Yeah, absolutely. He's a second-year starter, but he's also in year one with Andy Kotelnicki's system. So it's still new. It's still fresh. And, you know, it's been impressive, I think, for the most part. I think people need to realize that, you know, yes, he is a more experienced quarterback, but he's still, you know, in a new system, in some big games, you know, going through some of those natural ups and downs that you go through when you're in a new system. So I think I've seen a more confident Drew Aller. Obviously, they've been able to make some more big plays. There's some creativity in the scheme. I mean, they're still not elite at wide receiver, and they're still being able to generate some more chunk plays in the pass game. So encouraging, but with the caveat, you know, he's got to get it done against Ohio State. I mean, looked terrible against Ohio State last year. Didn't look well against Michigan either. Like, those are the games that he's going to be judged by. But so far, so good.
Now Oregon, Ohio State. I had a chance to watch the last 2.5 quarters on the plane coming back. Oregon's played well to this point, but haven't been, quote, overwhelming, because I saw them play Oregon State a little bit of against Boise State. What did Saturday night's performance at Autzen tell you about Oregon?
Well, I think it showed a couple of things, you know, that they are really talented to begin with and, you know, that they can find a way to win a marquee game like that. I mean, Dan Lanning's done a lot of great things, but had fallen short, you know, three times against their rival Washington, hadn't won a Pac-12 title, you know, just hadn't won the biggest of games. And I think it showed that Dylan Gabriel, I kind of thought of him up until that game as, you know, a solid, experienced quarterback, you know, certainly not Bo Nix and maybe not a national championship caliber player. And then you saw what he was able to do in that game. You're getting Evan Stewart involved, you're going after Denzel Burke, who's going to be an NFL cornerback, and really making him look bad. I think that was encouraging. And, you know, I think the line of scrimmage play for Oregon, you know, everyone kind of still associates them with speed and flash and the changing uniforms, what have you. But, you know, Dan Lanning's really built that program at the line of scrimmage with development, with their transfers. You know, Derek Harmon has been a major addition coming in from Michigan State to the defensive tackle spot, which really helped with a guy like Jordan Birch out. And then I think offensive line, they are much better than they looked early in the year. They had some new players in the interior. They lost Jackson Powers Johnson, who was an outstanding center, the Remington Trophy winner. They figured out some pieces in the middle of their line. And they're just right now looking like a pretty complete team. To be able to beat Ohio State without Birch, you know, losing another player to the ejection, that's encouraging. They can certainly build off of that.
And in fact, it was one of those games where you look at the number of mistakes that Oregon actually made in the game. The margin actually could have been wider than it ended up being. So then let's flip the page. Now let's look at Ohio State. We all know that they're talented in every level. What did they show you? What didn't they show you on Saturday night?
Well, yeah, I think you can see the talent. You know, their ability to attack defenses through, you know, multiple running backs. They're not overly reliant on one receiver. They have two of the best, probably the top 10 receivers in the sport right now, in Jeremiah Smith, the dazzling freshman, and then Emeka Ibuka, who people forget about, who would be the number one receiver on, you know, pretty much any team in the country. So they have a lot of different weapons for Will Howard. You know, and then defensively, you know, they have individuals who can make plays. But I go back to that side of the ball, Steven. This is somewhat thematic. If you look at Ohio State and why they haven't, you know, won the biggest games here the last few years, is, you know, do they have everybody collectively on defense playing at a high level late in games? And, you know, you look at the fourth quarter of the Oregon loss, the fourth quarter of the Michigan losses over the years, even the fourth quarter against Georgia in the national semifinal, you know, a game that Ohio State really thoroughly outplayed Georgia in for the most part and would have gone on and won the national championship, in my opinion. They don't make enough stops in the fourth quarter. So what is happening in those scenarios that's holding them back? And, you know, I just praised Oregon for their line of scrimmage play. I think it's fair to question a little bit where Ohio State's at with their offensive and defensive lines. Coaches have told me that the offensive line was an issue last year. You know, they just lost Josh Simmons, one of their best linemen, to probably a season-ending injury, which is unfortunate. And then the defensive line, you know, under Larry Johnson, who's someone your listeners know a lot about, we've heard about this group for many years. We've heard about how they're supposed to be the best defensive line in the country. I just don't see it on a consistent basis. Now, we'll see what happens after this open week. They get Nebraska, then they come out to State College, you know, where JT Tuamalu had the best single-game performance I've ever seen live from a single defensive player. But since then, what's he really done? Like, Jack Sawyer has been okay, better than okay at times, but certainly doesn't look like the number one overall recruit, you know, on a consistent basis. So I'm pretty critical of their line of scrimmage play. I think they could be better there.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me about JTT 2 years ago.
I mean, it was unbelievable because, you know, people thought, I wrote a whole story about Ndamukong Suh and what he did against Texas in the Big 12 championship game. They talk about that being, you know, the best defensive performance in recent memory. I wasn't there for it, so I'm always going to reference JTT at Beaver Stadium. I never saw anything like that from a defensive player.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't either along the way. I mean, I saw LeVar Arrington do some things, too, that were pretty unbelievable. But that was, you felt like it was a one-man wrecking crew, with all due respect. I have no idea if you've listened to anything, anybody that we do, but Jack Ham and I always give whomever's playing well credit for playing well. Right? Doesn't matter what team they're on. If you make plays, we talk about, hey, that was a great, great performance. We are getting to the point of the season where the two-loss pool is going to grow. Oh, and it's going to grow, no question, this weekend because, let's face it, Alabama, Tennessee, one's going to have two losses. If Georgia doesn't win at Texas, they've got two losses. How important to you now becomes the two-loss pool from this point forward?
Yeah, it's really important. And, you know, a lot of people don't love the fact that we're talking about two-loss teams and evaluating them for the playoff, but that's just the reality of where, you know, having a larger system is. So, it is critical for, like, what do you do with Georgia? If Georgia goes out and loses a single-score game on the road to Texas, are they out of the playoff picture? No, they absolutely should still be in it, but their margin for error has shrunk. You know, I think it'll be very interesting to see what happens to the loser of the Alabama-Tennessee game, especially if it's Tennessee, because, you know, Tennessee looked like a world beater. I mean, they were outscoring everybody by 50 points in the first 3 weeks, and their offense has completely flipped and looked very ordinary or worse than ordinary here the last 3 weeks. And so, you know, if they lose to Alabama, what's our view of Tennessee? And if Alabama loses, you know, they haven't exactly played well here since the halftime of the Georgia game. What do we think of Alabama? And there's so many other factors involved, and, you know, some of your other wins outside of conference are going to come into play. But, you know, I was at Baton Rouge last week, Steve, and, you know, saw LSU and Ole Miss, and, you know, I said it going into the game that this is a more important game for Ole Miss because they already have a loss in conference to a team that they're more talented than in Kentucky. And we don't say this often, but in watching those two teams on Saturday night, Ole Miss is more talented than LSU, and they lost again. So it's very difficult for me to see, even though they have Georgia and some other games left, very difficult to see Ole Miss making the playoff, whereas LSU, they're undefeated in SEC play, and they have Alabama and A&M and some other good opportunities, even Arkansas this week. They suddenly become a playoff contender. So it really is going to change week to week in terms of how we feel. But if you have two losses, you better win out or have a really good schedule and a lot of things break your way, because otherwise you're not making the playoff.
Yeah, no question. There's also another element, too. That's the Dan Lanning, 12 guys on the field. As somebody who broadcast the Brett Bielema three kickoffs, because that 1 year that when the ball was kicked, the clock started. So they deliberately went offsides three times. Now we have this. What strikes me about it is you could have 12 guys on the field. What if Oregon intercepted the ball? What if they recovered a fumble? They could have ended the game there. And, of course, 12 men in the field. What do you think about how they closed the loophole?
Well, yeah, I think the idea was that they knew they were going to get penalized. Right. And the idea was, hey, they can't hurt us for the clock part of it. And so, yeah, I mean, they could have given up a touchdown. They could have intercepted the ball. There's all sorts of things that happened. But I think they were okay with that, knowing that there'd only be, in the reality, 6 seconds left in the game. So, yeah, it's funny you bring that up, Steve. I talked to Brett about that play just a couple of days ago, and a lot of people don't remember it, but I know you and Penn State fans and all sorts of folks in your area are very, very much aware of what happened back in 2006. And, you know, again, coaches, I just talked to a Big Ten coach a few minutes ago who said, listen, you know, if it's in the rule book and we're, you know, it's not unethical. Like, we are paid to win games, and we're going to find every possible way to do that, you know, even if it leaves some people uncomfortable, or in the case of that play or the one that happened last week at Oregon, you know, prompts an adjustment in terms of how it's officiated. So, yeah, these coaches are looking for all of those things. I think the amazing part is, you practice those situations over and over and over, and you might only get them, you know, once in 10 years or once every 6 or 7 years, and you have to be ready to execute it in that moment. And for Oregon's sake, they did, and it certainly contributed to their win.
Well, again, if it's within the scope of the rule, I mean, in other words, what Brett Bielema did was not against the rules.
No.
Right? Now, is it in the spirit of the game? No, but it's not against the rules either, at least in that particular year. So that's why did Dan Lanning do something that, in the spirit of the game, like, really, But was it against the rules? No. Right? So he, it's like pine tar on the bat. Billy Martin pointed it out. So there you go. That's my analogy.
Right, yeah, and I think you're going to – it'll be interesting to see what else surfaces. I don't think this is going to happen like as a huge trend and we're going to see one of these per week. But, you know, it just – you kind of wonder what's the next one that could come up that we're all talking about. And maybe it isn't a big game like a Penn State, Ohio State, or Oregon, Washington, or whatever it is later in the season. It'll be a fun thing to discuss.
Let me ask you about Texas. They're the number one team in the country. They won on the road. They beat Michigan. Then they played in the Cotton Bowl in the Red River game and really manhandled Oklahoma. They did have a couple of holes coming into the season. So what has Steve Sarkisian done to fill those holes, fill their gaps, and the fact Quinn Ewers has missed time and Arch Manning has stepped in? What's your thought on Texas?
Yeah, no, I'm really impressed with Texas. I mean, with the caveat that both Michigan and Oklahoma are very limited offenses right now. Like, that's not the offense that they're going to face on Saturday with Georgia. But, you know, in talking to Sark last week, you know, he mentioned that, you know, people probably made too much of the fact of who we lost, say, on the defensive line, and they lost two great players. I mean, Byron Murphy II was a first-round draft pick, and Javondre Sweat won the Outland Trophy and probably would have been a first-round pick if he didn't have the drunken driving incident. And he's making plays at the next level. And so you lose those two pieces, but they have, you know, two veteran tackles to step right in, and they have really good depth on the edges with some returning players and then players that they've added through the portal. So, you know, Texas has been very, very effective, I think, in terms of supplementing their roster, you know, through the portal, you know, at some positions more than others. Like the receivers, most of them are transfers. You know, defensive end, they have, you know, Baron Sorrell and Ethan Burke that are back, but they also, you know, picked up Trey Moore, who might have been the best pass rusher in the group of coming in from UTSA, and they've developed some younger players on that defensive line. And I think that's the line of scrimmage at Texas. Everyone talks about Sark and quarterback play and creative play calling, and that's all true. But I think the work that he's done on the defensive line, but maybe more so the offensive line with Kyle Flood, your former Big Ten coach at Rutgers, who is one of the more respected line coaches in the country. You know, Texas's offensive line, you know, between the end of the Mack Brown era and Sark getting there, was largely ineffective, not producing guys into the draft. You know, somewhat similar to that stretch that Penn State had. Like, hey, why isn't Penn State producing NFL offensive linemen? Why isn't Texas producing NFL offensive linemen? You know, those days are over now, and they have one of the better lines in college football, and you're going to see that play out in the draft next year. So I don't see a whole lot of weaknesses there, Steve, although, again, reiterating, they haven't seen an offense like Georgia. They haven't seen an offense like Alabama and some of the other teams, A&M, even later in the year. So I think we can have a little bit better judgment on their defense after they're stressed a little bit more. But, man, having Quinn Ewers and Arch Manning as your quarterbacks certainly gives Sark some great options.
One final thing. It is on Arch Manning. We know what Quinn Ewers can do, and I'm impressed. Arch Manning has at least had his shot. Just an initial play, how good's he been?
Yeah, I mean, I think Arch, you know, I think he has played well and shown that he's not exactly a, you know, in terms of play style, exactly like his uncles, and, you know, obviously has that athleticism component to go with his arm talent. Now, you know, I think the Mississippi State game showed that he's not quite there. Sark, you know, I think rightfully kind of snapped at a reporter just now today who asked him about, you know, possible in-game quarterback change. That, you know, he's very committed to Quinn Ewers, and he should be. And Quinn's earned the right to be the starting quarterback for Texas this season, and Arch will be the starting quarterback for Texas next year. That's just how it's going to work. But you know, there's always going to be extra attention on him, and, you know, he performed pretty well, you know, under those circumstances, albeit against weaker competition. So excited to see his development, but I think this is Quinn Ewers' team, and Sark has been very loyal and committed to Quinn throughout this time.
Adam, always enjoy talking with you, and hopefully get to see you in person here pretty soon and catch up.
That'd be great. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate you.
The great Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com. Half hour brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This half hour being brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. All those insurance needs that all of us have. And you don't want to roll the dice. Rolling the dice brings with it trouble, so you need to be insured. So go with the pros. That makes sure, A, you're fully insured, and B, save you money everywhere they can find. It is Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Time now for the high school roundtable, where guess what? It is a week where everybody is in bounce back mode. First time we've had this all season long. Greg Wetzel joins us to start things off. Hello, Greg. How are you?
Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
Doing all right. So the first time we've had to have this conversation this year.
It's usually
a conversation to have with the suit every week of his life. But what? What? I mean, geez, I'm trying to show some compassion here. What the heck? I don't understand why everybody's laughing. All right. So let's get to, first of all, the game with Shamokin.
Yeah.
They're two really good football teams. What made the difference in the end?
I think the start of the game. Lewisburg tried an onside kick, which went 9 yards. If it would have gone 10 yard 1 inch, they would have recovered the ball. Because Shamokin wasn't ready for that at all. And they took the ball and drove down the field and scored a touchdown, took a 7-0 lead, and that had the crowd all hyped up. Lewisburg, they did okay. They kind of stemmed the tide, but they gave up 17 first-half points. They missed some opportunities in the first half to score. But they ended up 17-6 at halftime. Lewisburg came out second half, played well, and just came up on the short end, 17-12. They had two passes that they missed. Now, I'm not going to lay the blame on the quarterback or anything like that. It was just, you know, they were open, but Shamokin made good defensive plays. And that's a sign of a good football team, Steve. And it was two teams that played well. Shamokin just came out on top, 17-12.
Simple as that. I mean, sometimes yeah. It's just that close.
It really is. Both teams had one turnover. Both teams had about 200 yards of total offense. First downs were pretty even. Time of possession was pretty even. It just, Shamokin made the plays when they had to, and for the first time this year, Lewisburg didn't.
Because I always talk about in big games that are close. Can you find that one play in each half that in the end, when you look back on it, did they get either play in either half?
They did not get either play in either half. The first one was in the second quarter. Lewisburg had a receiver run a post pattern. He was wide open over the middle of the field. Quarterback missed him with the pass, threw it a little high and a little behind him. That was at the three-yard line. He would have caught the ball with no one touching him into the end zone. In the second half, he had a slot receiver running wide open down the middle of the field, and he threw the ball to the correct person. He just floated it a little. The safety came over and was able to intercept the pass. Both of the one resulted in a field goal for Lewisburg. 3 points would have been four more points. The other one resulted in no points and interception for Shamokin. So those are the two plays that Lewisburg needed to make in that game, and they did not make them. Defensively, they did a pretty good job. Shamokin has a real nice team, and they held them to, like I said, about 215 yards of offense.
All right, so now they have to bounce back. How interested are you by the response, considering it's got to be Montoursville on the road this week?
That's right. And, you know, it's funny, on the way here, Steve, I walked from the high school up to an elementary school. They're having a fundraiser there, and my granddaughter's running. As I'm walking out, I saw a couple football players, talk to them. I talked to the coach this week and said, what do you think? What's their attitude? He said, I think it's good. And the kids, all of them said, hey, we're ready to play. Our goals are still intact. We didn't talk about going undefeated. We talked about winning our division, which they've done. We talked about being a district champion and getting into the state playoffs. Our goals are still intact. So they sound very upbeat, and they sound like they're ready to go.
What are your thoughts on Montoursville?
They're a good team, Steve. They have good running back. A kid named Christian Banks, who runs for about 115 yards a game.
And they gave, Southern, they gave Southern all they could handle.
But he rolls out well, and he does a lot of play-action fakes and then rolls out. So I think it's imperative that we keep him in the pocket this week. I think we can score points on him, but I think we have to keep them from scoring a lot of points and keep them from running the ball and force them into passing the ball.
Yeah, no question. Again, they gave Southern all they could handle last week. They lost by only three. So,
Yep, they certainly did. So, yeah, they're a good football team.
Well, let's see what they can do in bounce back time. Good teams can do that. Lewisburg's
That's
a good
right.
team. Lewisburg's a good team.
That's right. Well, thank you, Steve. And
Greg,
I think
thank you. Appreciate it.
Hey, you take care. Have a good one.
All right, let's get Coach Briggs in here. Steve, first of all, how have you been? And it's bounce back time for Sealands Grove after the trip to Hollidaysburg. But you told everybody going in last week, hey, look, they haven't lost a game in the state of Pennsylvania. The only game they lost was a team from Maryland. When could you tell that this was not Sealands Grove's night, that Hollidaysburg's really good?
Probably about 3 minutes into the first quarter. Yes, I will say this again this week. Seals played Twin Valley early in the year, Jersey Shore, Shamokin. I don't know who the other undefeated team was that they played. Williamsport. This is Hollidaysburg by far was the most complete team they've seen, and saw it coming. Same group that of Hollidaysburg kids that we've seen in the past 3 years, virtually 23 seniors, 24 seniors, virtually all of them played, and their best lineman didn't even play because he broke his foot. So this is a good football team. They're a 5A team, and the reality of it is pretty darn good, and I think they hit a Seals team that was licking their wounds a little bit, banged up from previous weeks, the Shamokin and Chickalimmie game. So not to make excuses, but it was a complete domination in all phases. And unfortunate, but that happens in football, as we know, and now they got to turn the page.
Ask you, does a team that has been used to success over the years, How interested are you as to how, quote, they handle it? I mean, is it in some ways, I mean, you know, they didn't lose by one. How interested are you about their approach and how they handle it this week?
Well, you know, that's a great question. Long drive, and Pat O'Brien and I talked on the way back, and you know, there's a lot of differences right now. I mean, new head coach, new coaching staff, probably down on numbers as a full group. I really think this, Steve. You know, every team in America, high school, regardless, you know, they want to win. But before you win, I think there's a lot of things that have to happen, namely the process, right? And the process of creating winners. And I think that comes in the off season. I think the kids grouping together, working out together. This coaching staff wasn't put together till probably February or March, and probably didn't even completely get done till the end of May. That's not an excuse. That happens. It just doesn't happen a lot at Selins Grove. You know, Coach Scott and Coach Hess and Coach Hicks, and tremendous success through all three of them. But they're the only three coaches they've had in the last 60 years about. So it's just one of those things, and I think they got to get through it. And guess what? This week is a very good and improving Berwick team. So it's part of Central PA high school football, I think.
Well, Berwick has been obviously traditionally outstanding. I feel like this season they've been lurking. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yes, exactly. And you can tell once you put on the tape. They just whacked a really good Williamsport team. And I say really good. Selins Grove beat them. Williamsport's been reeling a little bit, but let me tell you something. Still good, athletic, tough Williamsport-type team. Berwick threw one pass and rushed for over 400 yards and beat them 37-14. Just that score lights you up, and the fact that it's Berwick and the tradition. And Coach Curry, which makes it interesting, C.J. Curry was quarterback coach at Selins Grove last year. So he knows the Seals very well. He's coached them. And certainly the tradition of George Curry, because George Curry is, C.J. Curry's grandfather. So really neat side bits here to this week.
Always enjoyed my conversations with him. You know, he'd come to a Penn State football practice. Just enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Always.
Terrific guy.
Coach, always a pleasure. Appreciate all the time you give us. This will be an interesting one this week. Look forward to talking next week.
Yeah, thanks so much. Take care, Steve.
You too. All right, and last but not least, here on WKOK, Danville and Shikellamy. Rays will be at home. Once again, they will not be honoring the suit.
You know. Steve, I miss him, all right? I mean, Steve Williams and I are good friends, but and Steve does a heck of a job, but, you know, I guess I miss just the banter that goes back. If Steve and I have banter, but Kevin and I had a lot of this is just a different kind of banter, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you and Steve actually talk about football. All right, so all right, one of those weeks. Wild game. Every team takes on its own personality. What was the personality of last Friday's game? Because last Friday's game had 58 points, or 68 points.
Yeah, it was. I was talking to Todd before I came on with you that Shikellamy could have won that game very easily. They went down 15-0 with 3 minutes gone in the first quarter because of a couple of quick passes by Bloomsburg's offense, and then our punter hit his protector in the rear, and the ball went to the 1 yard line, and Bloomsburg jumped on it, and scored on the next play. But our kids came back. I mean, they. Every time that at halftime it ended, it was 22-15, and we we scored to start the second half. I never thought that they were really out of that game. But like I told Todd, we were always in the catch-up mode. Catch-up. But to their credit, they answered a lot of times. And a couple mistakes, like you know, in every game, are very crucial, especially when you've got two teams that match up, I think, pretty on par with each other.
How many times have you heard me talk about playing with the lead? It's amazing.
All the time.
The psychology of it is dramatic. So, okay.
Yeah.
So when you watched the game on Friday night last week, what was good?
They got their passing game was well. Okay, I'm not going to talk about the running backs and the skill guys. I'm going to talk about the offensive line. They gave Brody Raybuck a lot of time to throw the ball, and they also had some did a good job. You know, when we ran the ball. Those kids don't get a lot of credit, but last night they were on Friday night they were all intact. There wasn't anybody that was injured, and I think they worked pretty much as a unit. And let's go over on the defensive side. Usually, you know, you're always talking about your linebackers that are making the tackles. Well, the three down guys that we have in there take up a lot of blockers, and they also had a couple of tackles on the back of the line of scrimmage, and they had a couple of sacks. So I thought I was very impressed with the line, especially the offensive line.
Well, they've got coming up this week, Danville.
Yep,
That's a big. Obviously, that's a it bring with it a lot of problems. So, what are some of the problems that Shikellamy will have to solve just in the matchup with Danville?
Well, they're going to have to stop the running game with Bo Sheptock. I mean, he's been awesome last year and this year. You know, I remember when his dad, Frank, was a linebacker at Mount Carmel. And, I just talking to Todd, I think Bo's – I always thought Bo was a bigger kid, but I watched him on huddle games. And, you know, he's just a good running back, solid. And if they don't stop him, it won't be much of a game, I don't think. I really think right now that Danville, as far as I know, has a couple of kids out, and they've been beat up pretty bad, and I'm sure they're trying to get healthy for the playoffs. But our Shikellamy team isn't going to back down to anybody. I don't care what their reputation is, what the games previously that they played. Our kids go out and they give 100%. They make mistakes, but it's not because their heart isn't in it.
One final question before I let you go, Dave. You know, when you go through a little bit of a rough patch like they did early in the season, sometimes coaches will simplify what they're doing. Is that what they ended up doing at Shikellamy? Did they simplify some things which then helped make the team better?
Well, I think in some respects they did. They were running the Delaware wing T, and that's a very complicated offense. And this would have been the first year that they were using it, and they went back to running more of a spread with split backs on the offensive side of it. And the one thing is they got Thomas Pollock into the game. I mean, he's our best vertical threat we have. And that kid for 131 pounds takes a beating, but you know, he catches the ball all the time. Very few times if the ball's within his reach that he drops it. It just doesn't happen. And I think that helped on defense. I always thought our defense played pretty good. I really do. They were just on the field all the time. And with our offense getting a couple of drives going, it's things have changed. It really have. And I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think the game is a little simpler for them.
Dave, always a pleasure.
Hey,
appreciate
Steve, do you have 1 minute I can tell a George Curry story?
Oh, please, go ahead.
I was a senior when George Curry came to Berwick. And he brought the West Coast spread offense to us. Before that, everybody played the gap six and two linebackers and three defensive backs. But I'm going to fast forward to about 20 years ago. I'm doing the Lewisburg football games, and Coach Curry was actually doing the Bloomsburg games, and we were up at Bloomsburg, and I just wanted to go down and talk to him, you know. And I tapped him on the shoulder and I said, "Coach Curry," and he turned around. And before I could tell him who it was, he goes, "Dave Ritchie, number 74. And that was my number in high school. And I'm telling you, I just couldn't believe that he remembered me. And I talked to Joe Robsock, who was one of his first quarterbacks, and Joe said that's the way that man was. He remembered players from other teams, and he always helped to get some of those players into college. And, you know, before that, sometimes I just thought about Coach Curry as being a good football coach, and also sometimes we because he was such a great adversary, sometimes you didn't have that positive feeling towards him. But boy, did that change in my direction. I just couldn't believe it.
Great story. That's the way it was. I mean, every time I saw him, "Hey, Steve, how you doing?" I mean, I didn't play against him for him or anything like that, you know, but he knew I broadcast Penn State football. He'd be at practice, and like I said, he was great to talk to. Dave, thanks so much. In the last few weeks, you've actually seemed calmer, more at ease, a lot more fun. I'm trying to think what the change was. All right, so
all right.
Dave, thanks so much, my friend. Appreciate you.
You bet. Thank you, Steve.
Don't you think so, Todd? It just felt like the entire station seemed more at ease, didn't you?
It's calmer. But hopefully this lets him be calmer, too.
Yeah. And how is our guy doing, by the way? Is he all right?
He sounds good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Good. Is he showing up at work?
Not yet. I think he's still down for October yet.
Okay.
He's aiming for hoops.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, sales have never been higher. I don't know. What does that mean? We'll come back with more in a moment. You're on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
October is truck month at Summary Motors with over 100 new trucks to choose from.
Sun.
SMC has 12 of the hard-to-find Ford Maverick trucks, priced as low as $27,890, and they get up to 42 miles per gallon. Pick from over 40 of the number one selling truck in the world, the Ford F-150, and Sunbury Motors has them slashed up to $12,416, and 4x4 Super Cruise are priced from just $46,874. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, proudly owned by the Mertz family for over a century. Hurry, sale ends Halloween Eve, October 31st.
Data. It's all around us. And Penteledata is everywhere you are, providing the region's fastest, most reliable fiber network. Our technology puts the world at your fingertips, in the classroom, boardroom, and hospital room. We keep business secure and families entertained, no matter where they are. Because in this universe of zeros and ones, we're still dedicated to the only number that really matters.
Your 100% satisfaction.
Penteledata.